Ambamasmanasuryeta
Daivakritannakannara
Ishasya hivashe loka
Ishasya hivashe loka
Kunte karyate hava
Kunte karyate hava
Vasudeva vacha
Vasudeva vacha
Ambamasmanasuryeta Daivakritannakannara Ishasya hivashe loka
Ishasya hivashe loka
Kunte karyate tava
Kunte karyate tava Shivasudeva uvacha Ambamasmanasuryeta Daivakritannakannara Ishasya hivashe loka Kunte karyate tava
Shivasudeva uvacha
Shivasudeva uvacha
Shivasudeva
said
Amba
Amba
Adiya sister
Adiya sister
Ma
Ma
Please do not
Please do not
Asman
Asman
With us
With us
Asuryeta
Asuryeta
Be angry
Be angry
Daiva
Daiva
Of fate
Of fate
Kridamakan
Kridamakan
The playthings
Playthings
Naran
Naran
Men
Men
Ishasya
Ishasya
Of the Supreme Lord
Of the Supreme Lord
He
indeed.
Vashe under the control.
Under the control.
Loka.
Loka.
A person.
A person.
Kurute.
Kurute.
Acts on his own.
Acts on his own.
Kayate.
Kayate.
Is made to act by others.
Is made to act by others.
Atava.
Atava.
Or else.
Or else.
Translation of verbals by the followers. Sri Vasudev said, Dear sister, please do not be angry with us. We are only ordinary men, playthings and fate. Indeed, whether a person acts on his own or is forced by others, he is always under the Supreme Lord's control. Translation responsibly. Sri Vasudev said,
Dear sister,
Please do not be angry with us.
Please do not be angry with us.
We are only ordinary men.
We are only ordinary men.
Playthings of fate.
Playthings of fate.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Whether a person acts on his own.
Whether a person acts on his own.
Or is forced by others.
Or is forced by others.
He is always under the Supreme Lord's control.
He is always under the Supreme Lord's control.
Text 21. Harassed by Kamsa. We all fled in various directions, but by the grace of Providence, we have now finally been able to return to our homes, my dear sister. Sukadeva Goswami said, Vasudeva, Ugrasen, and the other Yadus honored the various kings, who became supremely blissful and content upon seeing Lord Achyuta. All the royalty present, including Bhishma, Drona, Dhritarashtra, Gandhari and her sons, the Pandavas and their wives, Kunti, Sanjaya, Vidura, Kripacharya, Kunti Bhoj, Virat, Bhishma, and the great Nagnajit, Hurujit, Drupad, Shalya, Drishtaketu, Kashiraj, Damagosha, Vishalaksha, Maitila, Madra, Kekaya, Yudhamanyu, Sushama, Bahrika, with his associates and their sons, and the many other kings subservient to Maharaj Yudhisthira, all of them, the best of kings, were simply amazed to see the transcendental form of Lord Krishna, the abode of all opulence and beauty, standing before them with his consort. All these kings were now followers of Yudhisthira because he had subjugated each of them to her to earn the privilege of performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. The Vedic injunctions state that a Kshatriya who wants to execute the Rajasuya sacrifice for elevation to heaven must first send out a victory horse to roam freely. Any other king whose territory this horse enters must either voluntarily submit or face the Kshatriya or his representatives in battle. Omigyan, Timanandasya, Ginanjana Shilakaya, Jashun Militan Jena Tasmai, Sri Gurave Namaha, Sri Chaitanya, Nanobishtam, Stapitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupa, Kedanaya, Dadati Swa, Padantikam, Bancha, Kalpata Rubyascha, Kripa Sindhu Vivecha, Petitana, Pavanevyo, Vaishnavevyo, Namaha, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Prabhupada Krishna Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Queen Kunti says to Vasudeva, this is an amazing pastime. We just heard a description of all the personalities who were present at Kurukshetra during the solar eclipse. And it's an amazing lineup. Virtually everyone in the Mahabharata is there. Everyone that Krishna will now face in the future is there. The other demons that he will kill are there. Everyone is there practically. All the great personalities on earth have practically come to this place. So it's an amazing assembly. These days we do not have any comparison. Sometimes we have an assembly of the United Nations, or it's a big event if George Bush comes to Canberra for 24 hours. But you cannot compare the personalities to who were there previously. Even the demons, like Dhritarashtra, they were awesome personalities. Dhritarashtra wasn't just sometimes we have this conception, like he's just a demon. I'm thinking of Duryodhana. Duryodhana, sometimes we have this conception that he was just a demon, but actually he was an amazing Kshatriya, a very powerful Kshatriya. I mean, he kept the kingdom running efficiently. They were very potent personalities, full of great Shakti and great potency, and were full of strength, and they had many amazing qualities. Duryodhana's problem was that he was envious, and this is the nature of personality, or this is the nature of character or qualities. You may have so many good qualities, but if there's one bad quality, it can undo the entire situation. If you're envious, or if you're lusty, or if you're greedy, or if you're jealous, or if you're proud, any of these bad qualities, they can undo everything. Just like you can have a perfectly white dhoti, but you just have one black ink spot, and the whole thing is ruined. So this is the nature of bad qualities. So Duryodhana had many, many good qualities, but he had one overriding bad quality, and that was he was envious, could not control his envy. And because of that, then everything was completely destroyed. Any good qualities, it just became useless. If we cultivate these bad qualities, everything is diminished. It says in the Bhagavatam, your fame, right, your wealth, your pious credits, even the duration of your life, all these things are reduced by cultivating bad qualities. If someone is lustful, someone is proud, someone is envious, someone is greedy, right? Then all your good qualities will reduce. Your duration of life will reduce. Your wealth will reduce. Your fame will reduce. Just like someone can be very famous, but then you hear something bad about them, automatically everything comes down like that. But if one cultivates good qualities, then everything will increase unlimitedly, automatically. Actually, as devotees, we're not so much concerned with material things. Devotees are not so preoccupied with, for example, cultivating wealth or accumulating wealth, accumulating material assets. But if you do devotional service to Krishna sincerely and you're making progress, automatically those things will be bestowed upon you. The Bhagavatam says that. Automatically those things will be. One will have enough money. One will have enough material facility. All those things are there. Just like Yadav Prabhu has been a devotee for how long? 25 years. Many lifetimes. 25 lifetimes. Well, here 250 lifetimes. But he's been devoted to it, but he's never ever, because his emphasis is serving Krishna, then he's never been in want materially. Everything is provided automatically. Why is that provided? Because the emphasis is on Krishna. The emphasis is on serving Krishna. Devotees are more concerned with serving Krishna. You look after Krishna, Krishna automatically looks after you. Much more than you can look after him. It is said we take one step to Krishna, Krishna takes 10 steps towards us. So we don't even have to worry about our material facilities so much. Devotees, we don't preoccupy ourselves with those things. These things just automatically come. But our main concern is Krishna satisfied? Is Krishna happy? Just like it is said when you go to Vrindavan, everything which is cooked by the Brijvasis, everything which is cooked in Vrindavan, residents of Vrindavan, is said to be automatically prasadam. Has anyone heard that? Heard that? We've heard that before, right? So one time, Harisori Prabhu, this is in Harisori's diary, he asked Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, if everything's already prasadam, then why do we offer it to Krishna? And it's already been cooked in Vrindavan, it's already considered to be prasadam, so why do we offer it to Krishna Balaram? Prabhupada says, because otherwise they will get hungry. Because right? That's how the devotees in Vrindavan think. They think Krishna is our son. Krishna is our friend. Krishna is our lover. If we don't give him lunch, he'll be hungry. Just like if you go to some Indian person's house, pious Indian person's house, every 5 minutes they ask you, do you want something to eat? Are you hungry? Can I get you something? Like that. That is the nature of Vedic culture. So, in Vrindavan, the Brijvasis are always thinking about Krishna. That's why we serve the deities. That's why we cook Krishna's lunch. Right? That's why we make sure it's on time. Right? Because Krishna is hungry. Prabhupada said, when you cook for Krishna, you have to imagine Krishna is a 15-year-old boy. Right? What were you like when you were 15? Pretty hungry. Krishna's a 15-year-old boy. He's pretty hungry. Even you see, like, when the devotees make up the plates for the deities and they put the tallies on the plates, sometimes they half fill the tallies. That's not appropriate. Right? You've put as much in that tally as you can get in there. Right? You're talking about someone who is very hungry. Right? So you fill up the tally, right? And you make sure the puris are... Prabhupada said when he was here in Melbourne for the 9 o'clock offering, he said 8 big puris or 4 big puris. He said, I think he said 4 big puris or big puris or 8 medium puris or like 16 small puris. I think that's what Prabhupada said. That's what Krishna eats before he takes rest. Hungry boy. You have to make sure you feed. Have you seen what he has before Mangalati? Right? We're all getting up for Mangalati, we're all in the bath, right, putting on our tilak, getting dressed. You know what he's eating while we're doing all that? Have you seen what he eats before Mangalati? How many milk sweets he takes? Right? If you had that many milk sweets before Mangalati, right, you'd be swinging on those chandeliers. Right? You'd be ready. Right, you'd be dancing up and down, and you know, you're a Rupa, you're going up and down the back, and you're doing the twirlies all around and up the walls. And all that. So, this is Krishna is hungry like that. That's why we feed Krishna. So, the concern of the devotees is Krishna happy? Is Krishna satisfied? That is bhakti. We're not cooking, we're not doing the service because we have to do the service. Right? We don't get on the roster because we have to be on the roster. Right? We don't cook Krishna's lunch because we have to cook Krishna's lunch. We cook Krishna's lunch because Krishna is hungry. Right? And we're doing it for his pleasure. And the offering should be always of the highest standard. Right? Every offering you should cook should be of the best standard. Right? It should not become mundane or repetitive. Just like there was one famous cabaret singer in Las Vegas, I can't remember his name, fortunately, and he had to go on every night. He's a big famous guy, and thousands of people come to see him every night. You know, a big auditorium in Las Vegas, every night for months on end, this guy would just pack out the auditorium. So every night he gets up there and does his act, you know, 2-hour act, and then someone asked him, they said, how do you do it? Like, how do you get up there with enthusiasm every night and do it? You know, it doesn't just become, you know, mundane, it doesn't just become, you know. And he said, I do every performance like it's my first or last performance. Right? And that way I maintain my enthusiasm. So in the same way, when we cook an offering for the deity, for example, we should cook it like it's our first offering or it's our last offering. We should have that kind of enthusiasm when we serve the deities, when we do our devotional service. Right? We have to maintain that enthusiasm in our service. When we're chanting our rounds, we should be chanting our rounds like this is the last day you'll be chanting. Right? How are you going to be chanting on the last day of your life? What sort of rounds are you going to chant on the last day of your life? Right? You're not going to be like, you know. You know, you're going to be focused. You know, that's the last day. You know? So this is the way we should be performing our devotional service. Continuously reminding ourselves and enthusing ourselves and recommitting ourselves to Krishna. Anything in this world is sustained by a certain principle. You know? What makes us do anything in this world? Why do we do anything? Spiritually or material? Why do we do something?
Desire.
Desire, yeah. And what's the impetus for the desire?
Enjoyment,
yeah. Or pleasure, like that. Ananda mayo vyasat. It is ananda which drives the living entity, drives the soul. It is pleasure which drives the soul. It is pleasure which drives God. Krishna is driven by pleasure. He's always searching out for pleasure. Right? He's always experiencing pleasure and he's always increasing his pleasure moment after moment. Anandam buddhi vadanam. What does that mean?
Ever increasing ocean of
bliss. Ever increasing, ever expanding ocean of bliss. Krishna experiences more pleasure every moment than he experienced in the previous moment. Continuous, that is spiritual pleasure. The nature of material pleasure is it does not last. The nature of material pleasure is that it increases continuously. So we have to get that pleasure, right, in spiritual life. We're doing devotional service because it's not duty. You can't remain a devotee for many, many years out of duty. Very difficult to do. It becomes very dry. And why do devotees leave? Why do devotees stop performing devotional service? Because they're not getting the pleasure from the devotional service. The devotional service is always full of pleasure. Because it's under the influence of Kladini Shakti. Kladini Shakti means the bliss potency. This bliss potency is governed by Srimati Radharani. She gives us the bliss. If she sees that you're serving Krishna sincerely, she will give you enough bliss. You don't have to worry about that. You'll always be happy if you always have the right attitude in your devotional service. Prabhupada says in Nectar of Instruction, advancement in Krishna consciousness is based on the attitude of the performer. We have to have the right attitude. Right? And if we have the right attitude, then we'll always get the higher taste. Param drishtva nivartate. It will always be there. Right? So we have to learn to get pleasure from our devotional service. And how do you get pleasure from devotional service? You have to put Krishna first. Right? We start losing our taste when we start putting ourselves first. Right? We put more importance on ourselves than Krishna. That's when you see devotees start losing their taste. Right? But the taste increases the more you put Krishna first, and Krishna challenges you. Right? Krishna likes to challenge you continuously. Right? Are you going to keep serving me? Are you going to maintain your enthusiasm? Right? Are you going to keep serving me again and again and again, month after month, year after year? Are you going to continue? Right? And he challenges us. And sometimes he tests us. You feel like you're getting pretty fired up now. You know, when you start, when everything's going really well, you start getting a little bit puffed up. You know that feeling? It comes. Like everything's going really well, and you start getting that feeling like I'm doing really well. Like, and you start getting, you know, you walk around the temple like, you know, check it out. You know, I'm on the roll. You know, I am the man. I am the Mataji. You're in the zone, right? And then you get up the next morning and Krishna just goes, right? Just pulls the rug out, right? And then suddenly you're on your face and you're like, oh my God, what's going on? And Krishna says, right? You're coming to see him in the morning, you take darshan, and Krishna says to you, so, do you still have the same enthusiasm? Do you still want to serve me as much as you did yesterday? Huh? What does he say in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Happiness and distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat. Right? Why does he say the dualities? He points it, he says all these things in the Bhagavad Gita from the beginning in chapter 2. Right? These are the first things he says. When you do your service, you have to expect there's going to be changes and dualities. Don't expect it's just going to be easy like all the time. Right? You're going to be challenged continuously. So are you going to maintain your enthusiasm when it's not so easy? Are you going to maintain your enthusiasm when you're suffering defeat? Are you going to maintain your enthusiasm when you are losing something which is you're attached to? Are you still going to put Krishna first? This requires a great deal of commitment. And this is what bhakti is, by Rupa Goswami's definition. Anyavilashita shunyam. It has to be free of other things. Right? Other things cannot overpower your bhakti. Your bhakti must be the most prominent thing. Anuku yena Krishnanu shilanam bhaktiya uttama. Anuku means?
Favorable.
Favorable. Means the attitude towards Krishna must be favorable. Just like sometimes devotees might serve prasadam to other devotees, but they're not doing it in a very nice mood. All right, just slapping him on the plate, or
you want more?
Yeah, you want more? Yeah. Serving the prasadam not very nicely. Yeah, you know, I've had devotees like walk along. You know, like get a tray of puris. They get a tray of puris and they're walking along standing up, so they're about, you know, they're holding the tray to their hip, so they're about 3 foot in the air, you know, the puris about this high. Just dropping the plate, dropping the puris on people's plates. From 3 foot in the air. But here it comes. Yeah. Would you serve your spiritual master like that? It's not nice. If you're going to serve prasadam, if you're going to do any service for any person, including Krishna, who is the Supreme Person, right, it must be done anukul. Anukul means favorably. Right? Otherwise, don't do the service. Let someone else serve prasadam. Right? Because 50% of the digestion is in the serving. 50%. Right? If it is certain, you know, when someone serves very affectionately, serves prasadam very sweetly, right? Digestion has already taken place, 50%. The other 50% is taking the prasadam, honouring the prasadam in the right consciousness. But if someone serves not nicely, it's not pleasant. So already your digestion is disturbed, your mind is disturbed, it's very difficult. So bhakti must be done, anukul. And Krishna is watching. Krishna is watching. How do you serve me? Right? You can serve, yeah, you can cook the offering, you can offer the offering, you can do all these things. What's the consciousness of what you're doing? Are you anukul? Are you favourable? Are you doing it pleasantly? And Krishna is watching when we're dealing with all of his devotees. Are you treating the devotees anukul? Anukul means favorable. Are you treating the devotees gently? Just like Radha Swami was saying in one of his classes in Mayapur, that if you offend Krishna's devotees, it's like sticking a thorn in the foot of Krishna. Krishna's lotus feet are so soft. That when he goes out into the pastures in Vrindavan, the gopis, Mother Yashoda and all the gopis, they're in constant anxiety. Is he going to step on a rock? Is he going to step on a thorn? His feet are so soft. Is he going to hurt himself? So would you ever go to the deity and get a thorn and stick it in the deity's foot? But if you treat Krishna's devotees, who are more dear to him than his life himself, if you treat them improperly, that is like sticking a thorn into Krishna's foot. So therefore, anukul, right? We must develop a favorable attitude in our service to the devotees, to Krishna, to Tulsi Devi, right? And to Krishna himself. This must be the mood. So, it is being described here that these devotees are assembling in Kurukshetra, and they're meeting Krishna. Some of them are meeting Krishna after a long, long time. Some of the personalities there are demoniac, as we said, like Duryodhana has this envious mentality towards Krishna. Even though he's in the association of Krishna directly, even though he's in Kurukshetra and he's with Krishna, but he cannot associate with Krishna. He cannot take the benefit of Krishna's association. Even though he's at Kurukshetra, Krishna himself is there, he cannot benefit from the association. Even you can be in the temple right before the deities, but if you don't have the right attitude towards the deities, towards the devotees, you can't get the benefit of their association. And that's what happens in Kurukshetra. All these personalities come. Duryodhana is such a qualified personality in so many ways, but because he's envious of Krishna and envious of Krishna's devotees, the Pandavas, he cannot get any benefit. And his life is shortened. Not long after this he dies on the battle of Kurukshetra. But many of the devotees there are very favourable towards Krishna. This chapter is actually one of the intimate chapters of the Bhagavatam, one of the most intimate chapters of the Bhagavatam, because this is where the Brijbasis meet Krishna again after many, many years of separation at Kurukshetra. So Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur has said that actually the highest place of worship of all places is Kurukshetra. Because the mood of intensity of the Brijbasis towards Krishna, the feelings of love become so intense in their union with Krishna and Kurukshetra, it surpasses even many of the emotions they experience in Vrindavan. And when they met Krishna and Kurukshetra, the gopis said, come back. Right? Radharani said to Krishna, you are the same Krishna. I am the same Radharani. But I'm not satisfied at this place. You are standing in a chariot. You're wearing armor and a crown. He said, take off all those things. Right? Just pick up a flute, put a peacock feather in your head, and come back to Vrindavan with me. And on the full moon night, we will dance together in the forest, as we did once before. So this is the mood of intensity. And you see in Ratha Yatra, in Jagannath Puri, during the Ratha Yatra, then Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya, would meditate on this mood of bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan. When Lord Jagannath leaves the Jagannath Mandir and goes to the Gundicha Mandir represents Vrindavan. So Mahaprabhu is in this mood of bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan, just like the residents of Vrindavan are trying to bring Krishna from Kurukshetra back to Vrindavan. Right? So this chapter is actually one of the most intimate chapters of the Bhagavatam. We'll see as the later verses of the chapter explain the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. So, Vasudeva says to Kunti. Kunti has just said, I went through so many calamities. The Pandavas had to go through 13 years in the forest. Or did that happen after this? Yudhishthira performed the Rajasuri sacrifice.
It's after.
Yeah, it must be after. Like that. Because then they come back. They request, yeah. So it must be after that. But Kunti is saying, by this stage, Kunti has gone through the house of lack, tried to be burnt, like that. All these different situations have taken place. There have been so many calamities which have taken place. They've gone through so many difficulties, like that. But did they go through the house of lack? So they've gone through so many difficulties. Kunti has suffered so much, right? This is a very interesting philosophical point. You have to understand, as a devotee, Krishna says, Sarvadhamam Parichyajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja Aham Twam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Yashami Masuchaha. I will protect you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Just surrender to me. So then it's a very interesting philosophical point that Krishna says, just surrender to me and I will protect you from all sinful reactions. And then he puts the devotees through so much distress. So this is something we have to come to terms with as a devotee, that when you do surrender to Krishna, Krishna will put you through distress. Material distress is guaranteed as a devotee. Guaranteed. You will go through it. But what is the purpose of that distress? It is medicine. Right? Krishna has given you medicine because he wants you to surrender more to him. He wants you to become detached from this material world. So therefore he gives you distress, he gives you difficulties purposefully, because he wants to increase your devotion, he wants to increase your dependence upon him. So that is the nature of Krishna giving these distresses. So this is the situation that Kunti experienced. She went through so many difficulties. Krishna never says in the Bhagavad Gita that he will protect you from material distresses. And he says, I'll remove your sinful reactions, right? But he never says. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, you have to tolerate material distresses because they will come. That's the nature of the material world. Right? So here, Vasudeva says to, in reply to Kunti, he says, my dear sister, please do not be angry with us. We are only ordinary people, playthings of fate. Indeed, whether a person acts on his own or is forced by others, he is always under the Supreme Lord's control. So sometimes people become confused. Sometimes people find it hard to understand who is responsible for activity. You see in many theological traditions, you will see that this is a big question which is asked. How much are we responsible for our own destiny? How much are we responsible for our own fate? How much are we responsible for our own actions even? So this is answered here by Vasudeva. He says, whether a person acts on his own or is forced by others, he is always under the Supreme Lord's control. So we have to understand this concept properly. It is not that we have no independence or control of our destiny. Right? Every one of us has independence. That is our philosophy. Right? Just like some people say, everything is predestined. Right? Everything that we do is predestined. How I'm going to act today, that is predestined. What I do today, that is predestined. And then some people even extend the philosophy to say that Krishna makes you do it. Right? Today you go and do some maya. Right? And then you say, well, Krishna made me do it. What can I do? I'm just a jiva. Right? Krishna makes me do all those things. Right? But then other people say that everything is based on free will. Right? It's not destiny. Nothing is predestined. Everything is free will. You make all your choices. And if you just think the secret of life is that if you just think positively, all good things will happen to you. One video that one of the devotees showed us was called The Secret. Have you seen that one? Oh, you heard it? You heard it? You heard of it? Yeah, I saw it, unfortunately. I didn't see it all. It goes for 6 hours or something. I saw it about half an hour. It's enough. So the whole philosophy is, you just think positively, and only good things are going to happen to you. Right? So this may be true in Disneyland. But it's not true in the real world. Right? If you want to live in Disneyland for the rest of your life, fine. But, you know, if you want to be in reality, that's not the way it works. You can just think positive things. You know, I'm going to be with... And what you do if you join this secret club, then they give you a check. And it's not a check that you can actually cash in anyway. But it's just a check. You know, it's the secret and all that. And then it says, you know, it's got this huge column. And you have to write a figure in it. And you write the figure, and whatever figure that is, you just keep meditating on it, and that's how much wealth you'll get. And you shouldn't limit yourself. The column's like, you know, this long, the check's about that long. Well, the column's about, it's not that long, but it's about that long. Right? The column's about that long. I mean, you can write like $3 trillion. And you just think about it, it's all going to come. Just be nice to people. Right? It's all going to come. Right? It's not reality. Right? It is not based on free will. Right? Vaishnava philosophy, the Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us, predestiny and free will are simultaneously coexisting. So we have to understand that is reality. Reality means a certain amount of things are predestined. That is called prarabdha karma. Right? You already have this particular material body you have. That is predestined. You can't change that. Right? You can't jump into his body, he can't jump into your body. Right? That's what you've got, that's what you've got to deal with. That's your predestiny. That's your fate. Right? And everyone's body and everyone's mind is going to act differently. And you have to live with that. Right? Some people get a good deal, some people get a bad deal. That's the way it is according to our past activities. But what we do from now on, that will change our future. Just like the body we have now is based on what? What we did previously. Right? Everything we did in our previous lives has given us this body that we have now. Right? And the body we get next is all about what we're going to do in this lifetime. How we use this body, right, will create the next body. The next body is being created. Right? And you can create, or you can evolve into a spiritual form if you use this body only for spiritual purposes. Right? If you use this form, this material form becomes spiritualized. Right? This form actually becomes spiritual. Right? If you use it in Krishna service, that is our philosophy, that is Yukta Vairagya. So if you use everything in Krishna service, then you create your next body to be like that. So Vasudeva is saying that, I'm sorry, he says to Kunti, I'm very sorry that I did not look after you while you were going through so much distress. But he said, fate is a very powerful thing. Right? Fate is a very powerful thing. So we have our predestiny, we have our free will, right? We have to deal with our predestiny, we have to use our free will correctly. And then for devotees, it's the third factor. Right? There's Krishna's will. Right? So you might have your will, you might have, you know, all the previous karma set up perfectly, and now Krishna's going to decide what to do with you. Right? And that's when it really becomes fun. Right? Because what he does is, like Maharaj said yesterday, he's got a wonderful sense of humour. He's going to take you on the ride of your life. Devotional service is exciting. Don't worry about anything. Don't think I'm missing out. You know, I'm young. I should be out there enjoying the world like all the happy people. There's so much out there to enjoy. Yeah. I have to go to, I don't know, I haven't seen Dream World yet. I haven't seen Movie World yet. I haven't seen Disney World yet. I haven't seen the big pineapple. I haven't seen all that. I haven't enjoyed yet. Don't you worry. Right? Personal service is much more exciting. Much more exciting. But you have to get with the program. Krishna will give you more bliss and satisfaction than you can manage. But you have to be with the program. You have to be there. And Krishna will give you unlimited pleasure. right? Just like since I've been a devotee, like before I became a devotee, I never travelled anywhere in the world, never been on an aeroplane before I became a devotee, right? And then within 2 or 3 months of being a devotee, I was on a plane going to Tasmania, where we had 3 weeks of Sankirtan, taking cold showers in May in Tasmania. That was exciting. When I came back to Melbourne, I got in the shower and I turned on the cold, because we're having cold showers at that point in our life. I was under the discipline of a certain leader who was a fanatic like that. So we're having cold showers. And I came back to Melbourne, I got under the shower, a cold shower, and I thought I'd put my hot tap on. Because I'd just been in Tasmania for 3 weeks having cold showers, you know. And I thought, I turned the cold tap on, I got under, and I thought, oh, that's a hot tap. And then I said, no, it's a cold tap. Yeah, Melbourne cold water is nothing like Tasmania cold water in Melbourne. That's cold. So everything becomes exciting. And then within a few years, you know, I started going to India. I've been to India like, you know, 17, 18 times or something. You know, I've been to Fiji, I've been to Africa, I've been to Europe, been to London, I've been to Malaysia, all these kind of places. Never really planned any of it, right? Except India. I mean, I've planned to go to India, but all the rest are just Krishna's arrangements, right? Seen most of the world, right? Had an exciting life, had a good life. I died now, I can say it was this. I can say I've experienced a lot, right? And I'm very satisfied, right? And spiritually, I've learned so much, right? So that is devotional life. If we surrender to Krishna, Krishna will take care of your material and your spiritual aspirations and desires. Everything will be taken care of. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we've discussed. Yes?
I'm trying to work out what is the sorrow that Krishna is referring to. And as far as I can tell, it must be that she's the mother of the Pandavas, right? The Pandavas died and left to a widow. Does that seem fit?
Yeah, that's the beginning of it. But then there was all the tribulations they go through in the Mahabharata. If you read the Mahabharata, it's all about the Pandavas and all the and Kunti and all the difficulties they go through. Like that, they went to I think it was Mithila, and Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana built a house of lac, which means the entire house is flammable.
This is kind of later, isn't it? Like they're all friends.
No, this must be before. I'm trying to work out the chronology here. Kurukshetra was after this.
Yeah,
but Yudhisthira has done the Rajasuya sacrifice. I'm just trying to think of the chronology of what happened. And so when do they go to the forest? That's what
purport to check fine.
That's what works a lot when they went to the forest.
Somebody commented earlier that this is before the Rajasuya sacrifice because at Kurukshetra.
No, it's not. It's not. Because it says here that all the kings assembled, being subjugated by Yudhisthira during the Rajasuya. Prabhupada already gave a purport on it, so it's after the Rajasuya. So they went to the forest. Now the forest is after the Rajasuya. So what kind of is this? The forest is after the Rajasuya, because that's when he performs the Rajasuya, he dominates earth, and then Duryodhana invites him to Hastinapur, and then they have the gambling match, and then they go to the forest. But I'm just trying to work out the house of Shalakam.
Even when they were children, Duryodhana used to feed them poisonous cakes. He fed Bhima
poisonous cakes.
I remember getting life is quite tragic from a material point of view, because she first time with Karna was an accident and she had to give him up, and then her husband died, and then she had 5 children who the emperor wanted to kill, or was it cooperating with Duryodhana's plan to kill? So it was from a material perspective, it was quite tragic.
Yeah. The House of Black and all those things that happened before this, right? Because what happened is, like Yadu was saying, they were mistreated, and then they sent them off to another city. They tried to burn them in the middle of the night, right? They had to go into cognito and hide during this period, and then at the end of that period, they found Draupadi. Right, Arjuna won Draupadi, and then they became public again, right, and then everyone knew that they were there. They came back to Hastinapur, and then they said to Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, can we have half the kingdom? And they said, yes, we'll give you half, we'll give you that half, the desert. You guys go and have the desert. That was Rajasthan, all that area, Gujarat, Rajasthan, all desert area. They said, you go and have that. So they drove out there with Krishna, and they were looking at the desert. And then Krishna called Indra, and Indra rained. And when all the rain came, then everything became fertile and lush in front of their eyes. And then Krishna called Vishwakarma. And then overnight, when everyone was resting, they woke up in the morning, and Indraprastha had been built by Vishwakarma. Like that. And then everyone came up there to visit. You just invited everyone, come. You invited all the cousins, just come for a holiday, come and stay with us. So they all came up there. When they saw Indraprastha, Duryodhana just became envious. Because he sent into the desert, now he had a kingdom even greater than. Like that. So then Duryodhana went back to Hastinapur, and then he called them down for the gambling match. And that's when it all happened like that. He performed the Rajasuri sacrifice when he was in Indraprastha. So this is after that. So, any other question?
Well, you said that Krishna takes the leg of the creation, he takes people to something. But two or three points are like, one is basically when he is Vishnu, and then Nashima, Kavacha, and all that, in the first meeting, you pick up for Nashima, you get all the material opponents plus illumination. The mission on the package, but you get a little one or two lights in the material world, plus liberation also you get. So how do we understand those?
Krishna may or may not give you material facility during your life. If you surrender to him, then he guarantees he'll give you liberation. Krishna guarantees he'll take you back to Godhead if you surrender to him in your life. But he may or may not give you material opulence during your life also. But whether or not, if the devotees surrendered, if they do attain material opulence, they won't be attached to it. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he had so much material facility, but he wasn't attached. So that's the nature of the devotee. You may be given the benedictions, but the benedictions are simply used in the service of Krishna. Just like devotees may become wealthy, just like Kanambakanand Swami told us yesterday. There's one devotee in Europe, and he's done business, and he's earned 350 million euros, right? Which is like 600 million dollars, I think, Australian dollars. Right? So he just brought a temple in Amsterdam for the Dutch Yatra, 2 million euros. Just there, 2 million euros. So he's received a great deal of opulence, but he's using that in Krishna's service. That's the point. No use having the material. Krishna will give it, but no use having it if you don't use it in the service. Like Grihasthas, they work very hard, and they may become wealthy. It's not uncommon, but that wealth is not yours. You have to understand that. That wealth is Krishna's. It has to be used in your service. 50% you can use, right? But the other 50 goes to Krishna.
So what do you mean? As long as you are attached, you will go to something. As long as you are attached.
Yeah. Chanakya Pandit says there is no suffering like attachment, and he says there's no pleasure like detachment. So if you're attached, you'll suffer. That's in that, we all know that. When we become attached to something, it's material world, we suffer. And when we're detached, then we feel liberated. We feel very light, very free. So that's the nature of attachment. Therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, don't become attached. Jayato Vishayam from Sama, Sangaste Shupa Jayate, Sangha. Sanjayate karma. Sangha means? Yeah, association or attachment. Sangha, sanjayate, karma. Karma means desires. Right? As soon as you become attached to something, then desires, then necessary. So therefore, what Krishna says, do not become attached. Okay? Which is not easy, but that's what we have to do.
And similar thing, Prabhu, you said, Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita that I will take care of the sinful reaction
But it is not that I would take care of those, you know, I would protect you from material distress. But isn't material distress part of our sinful actions? Do we get the action for that?
It means your everything that happened to you previously, Krishna will wipe away the reactions. In other words, he'll take away your bondage to this material world. Because reactions bind us, right? Everyone in this material world is forced to take birth again because there is karma which they have to receive the reactions for. Right? As soon as you get into samsara chakra, karma, you're forced to take repeated birth and death because you have to receive the reactions for your previous activities. So it never ends. The only way you can break it is by taking to a spiritual path, a genuine spiritual path. So Krishna says, if you surrender to me, I wipe away all of that, so you don't have to take birth again, so you can come back to me. But the nature of the material world is that you must go through distress. That's the nature of it. Mm-hmm. Even pure devotees are put into distress by the material energy. Because the nature of the material energy is that she is harsh. So it's natural. It has to happen. In the Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma, before he began to create, there was violent winds which shook the lotus flower. Right? And Prabhupada explains in the purports just there, he says, even for a pure devotee, because Brahma was a pure devotee at that point, even for a pure devotee, if he's in the material world, because he's in the material world, then he's surrounded by distress. So he has to accept it. It will come. It's not that it leaves him alone. That's the nature of the material energy. But he's resolute in his service to Krishna. It does not stop his service to Krishna. Just like the Pandavas, they went through so much distress, but they never gave up Krishna. That's why Krishna put them through the distress. It's setting an example to us. Distress will come, because you're in the material world, you can't avoid it, but do not stop your service to Krishna. Does that make sense? Someone else had a question?
You were saying earlier how you should do our service out of love to Krishna. I think sometimes this in the beginning we don't have so much love to God. So I think I was reading in Nectar Devotion that we should do our service out of duty, and then later on that love of God will come. Is that right?
Yeah. I didn't say that we do it with love in the beginning. I said and must be done favourably. Means favourable attitude, which is the beginning of love. Like that, it's favourable attitude. The attitude must be favourable. That's the point. If the attitude is unfavourable, then Krishna does not appreciate that attitude. Just like us, we don't appreciate when someone does something for us, but it's not done sincerely. When it's unfavourable, we don't appreciate that. Krishna is the supreme person. He's the original person. So he doesn't appreciate when someone serves him, but it's an unfavourable attitude. It's the attitude which he's looking for. So in the beginning we do it out of duty, partially out of duty. But we do it out of some sense of wanting to give Krishna pleasure. Even in the beginning. It's not pure duty. And the point I was making is that if it stays too much on the duty platform for too long, you'll leave. Because it becomes labour. Right? It becomes like hard labour. Like, you know, these Hare Krishnas have got me tied to the kitchen. They've chained me there. You know, and I just have to do this hard labour like that. Then it's not pleasurable. So if the attitude is favourable, then it becomes very pleasant. Okay. You look forward to doing the service. You should always be looking forward to doing the service. Okay, so. Any other questions or comments?
The average chant, as far as I understand, Prabhupada indicated that
Average japa should take 2 hours. Average. I've heard authorities chanting in an hour and a half, 16 rounds. I personally have never, ever, ever been able to do it like that. I've never gone below 2 hours myself. I'm a slow chanter. But on average, devotees should chant like that. If they're chanting 1 hour, they're probably skipping beads, and you'd really have to question the quality of that chanting. Like, you'd want to listen to what the mantra was, you know, because there's a good chance the mantra is not coming out completely. You know, it may be skipping words. The basic principle of chanting is that there are 16 words in the mantra, which means there are 32 syllables in that mantra, and each of those syllables should be audible and clear. When you hear someone chanting japa, right, it should be Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You should be able to hear the words, right? If you stop hearing any of the 16 words, 32 syllables, then that japa has already become somewhat compromised, right? That. So you should be listening clearly to the sound of the holy name, right? Krishna, Ha Re Ra Ma, right? That is the holy name, right? Not R. That's not the holy name. So you can chant, but you don't get the benefit of the chanting unless you hear the holy name. That's the point. So my answer would be 2 hours is the, it should be 2 hours, that kind of space. Personally, it takes me about 2.5 hours. Personally, it takes me about 2.5 hours to finish my 16 rounds. I don't have a problem with that. Like that, because I try to chant, I try to hear the name, and I know that when I chant nicely, I get a taste. That's what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for a time block, I'm not looking for a space, I'm looking for a taste. I'm looking for a connection with Krishna, I'm looking for purification, I'm looking for reaping the fruit or the result of chanting, which is Lord Chaitanya says in the beginning, Cheto Dapana Marjana, the heart must be becoming purified. So that's what you should be looking at. But it should stick around 2 hours like that. If it starts getting too long, then that's not practical. My spiritual master told me one time, because I've always chanted 2.5 hours like that. He said it should be 2 hours like that, 2 hours. Meaning don't space out like that. Some devotees chant for 1.5 hours. I know some very good devotees that chant for 1.5 hours. Yeah, I can't personally do that. But if someone says they're chanting for 1 hour, then, you know, it's doubtful that's very good job. Does that make any? It's okay.
Probably 6-7 minutes. Probably 6-7 minutes.
Once. 6-7 minutes.
Per round.
Per round.
So that ends up 96 to 112 minutes. So 8 minutes is also.
Yeah, so two hours is 7 minutes.
2 hours would be the average, and then 1.5 to 2.5 would be acceptable. And then if you get outside that, you're going too fast, but it's slower.
Yeah.
And he took the japa class for all the devotees and he told that average should be 6 minutes per japa. Yeah. And it makes 16 hours, it means 1 hour 92 minutes. Around 1 hour 92 minutes to 1.92 minutes.
That's just over an hour and a half.
Yeah, hour and a half.
Okay. So everyone says something different. what I've learned since I joined is the thing I've heard more than anything is 2 hours. Yeah, I've heard this, I've heard that, I've heard this, I've heard that, but more often than not, the majority of the time I've heard 2 hours. So just, yeah, stick around. I don't worry about the time, I look for the quality. That's all I look for. I don't have time, you know, like, you know. I take notice of the time, right? You know, if I know, I can see, oh, I'm chanting too slowly or like that. I don't have a problem with chanting too fast. You know, I'm glad I didn't go to Maharaj's japa course because I would have failed them. Because I can't chant 6 minutes around. I don't worry about too fast, but I worry about too slow. Yeah, if I get too slow, then I know that I'm spacing out or I'm too tired or something like that. So. When I was living in Melbourne, then quite often we chant our japa in the morning in the temple, and there's a lot of men here. And some of the devotees are very loud chanters, like very loud, to the point that it becomes distracting to your own japa. So I said to those devotees, I just, you know, said very politely, I just said, you know, would you mind chanting a little more softly, because then all of us can chant and concentrate on that japa. So you just say politely to the devotee, just say, you know, if you're chanting in private, then chant as loud as you want. You know, if you're by yourself, you can chant as loud as you want, because it doesn't disturb anyone. But if you come into a room and there's, you know, 10 devotees or 5 devotees or even 2 devotees or even 1 devotee there, then you have to be conscious of them also. So if someone's chanting too loudly, just say, Prabhu, do you mind? Can you please chant a little more softly? Because then you can both chant, both concentrate like that. Thing is that if devotee relationships are nice, you can just say things to each other very nicely. It doesn't have to be this whole false ego battle every time you say something. You know, someone just says, you know, Prabhu, do you mind chanting? You know, what about your job? What time did you get up this morning? You know, and how much did you eat for breakfast? What the hell is that? You know, do you want to live in a society like that? Every time you say something, someone's like, no. It's like this whole continuous ego battle on every single time. You know, the point is that devotee relationships should be close. They should be close. You should be able to, you know, develop relationships to a point and an extent that you can go to a devotee and say, for, you know, the chanting's a little bit loud. You know, do you mind if you chant a little bit softly? And the devotee says, yeah, fair enough. That's okay. Yeah, it should just be a basic level of respect and acceptance. And also, we should be conscientious. Prabhupada said, first become conscious, then become Krishna conscious. Right, so you should be conscious. Like, you know, I know when I first joined, I used to chant very loudly myself. And then some devotees pointed that out to me. Right, so then you have to become conscious of that. You know, if you're with a group of devotees, then you have to chant softly. Right? If you're by yourself, then you can chant loud. But if you're with others, so you have to be conscious of how others are being affected.
This morning, during the DVDs, one devotee said to me, asked me to move because they couldn't see the DVDs. And then if I moved, I couldn't see the DVDs. And then I was talking to them afterwards, they said, it's like a, you know, the way everyone sort of, you know, the people off the back can't see the deities, so is there anything you can do about that? Or is it just some people can't see them?
Probably the main thing you've got to understand is, you know, we're not the only people in the temple. That's the main thing to understand. So, 50% of the temple, when we're having public programs, belongs to the Matijis. 50% belongs to the Prabhus, right, the men. Now, half the time the men take over about 95% of the temple. And the poor Matijis are going to kind of dance in the back corner there. You know, 12 of them, like in the back corner, you know, like that. And the men are just doing whatever they want. It's like when, you know, we go to greet the deities in the morning. The men will line up from there. They start lining up in this column instead of moving down to the front. They start lining up this column. And they have about 2 feet apart in between each one, and they go all the way back to like the last column, right? And all the women, right? Sometimes there's as many women as men. They're just supposed to somehow fit, you know, as if it's a spiritual world, you know, like a, you know, go beyond space and time and just all fit there. Right? So the point is that the men should be conscious to come down, right? Give the women, and also then after we greet the deities. Then we go up to line up to give Prabhupada the flowers off Prabhupada. The men should be from that door up. Right? You see the men are coming all the way down to the Charanamrita practically. Where are the women supposed to be?
Is it standing 2 lines or
something? Yes, I'm getting to the point. So the first point is be conscientious of the opposite sex. Right? That's culture. Culture means you are conscientious of the requirements of the opposite sex. That's culture, right? An uncultured society is not conscious, like, you know, becomes male, how do they say it? Male chauvinistic, like that. That, you know, only men are important. Men are more important than women. That's not Veda culture. Veda culture is there is equality, but there is difference in that equality,
right? So we segregate like that, but we give half attention, so we should be conscious. That's the first thing we should be conscious of. And then when it comes to the men, now we've got to work out how we can all see the deities, right? So now the devotees should line up all the way to the front. The senior devotees should go at the front, the temple president or the sannyasi or whoever the senior devotee is, they should go at the front. Everyone lines up closely because there's not that much room, you can go halfway back, right? And now what they've started doing is if there's too many devotees, then you start lining up like a second line over here. And then when the devotees come across from Gaudiya to greet Radha Vallabha, then the other devotees might go over to spend time with Gaudiya. There's enough time there during the Govindan prayers to do it. Everyone just has to work it out. Now the basic principle is during the kirtans is that the men have to be standing at Mangaladi time and so forth, they have to be standing in line with the columns, right? Because the muttages are standing behind us, right? So therefore they have to be able to see the deities. And they can't see the deities if we're standing in the middle. We have to stand where the columns are. So when we're greeting the deities, we have to stand where the columns are. Not that we all, you know, we take up that whole space and the women can't even see the deities. That's not proper. So it means if you can't see the deities, then just wait for all the devotees to move across and then just come down and see them. Okay. And the other thing is plenty of time during the day to see the deities as well. Yeah, it's not like we've only got like 15 minutes each day to see the deities. The deities are open, you know, practically all day. So if you miss time, you can come back later also. Does that answer?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Sure.
It's
quite a passionate topic. Sometimes, you know, you can see like men and women, they have different rights and they have different areas, and usually women don't like so much to push themselves in the front and you know, take over. And I've observed sometimes a bit of the competition coming from the woman kind of counteract the men in a good way, which is, seems to be quite unnatural. And could you just explain also about that, how a woman could like accept this state of the man and then they have a certain position given to the scriptures, given to Krishna, and how can women better understand and accept it and also feel more comfortable in just being a woman in that connection?
What's the example? Yes, give me an example.
Yeah, sometimes you can see that women get a bit envious of men. And they express it in the way that they say it and then try to choose them and
it's vice versa. Like some of the attitudes the men have towards the women are not good either.
Mm.
And the attitudes the women have towards the men are not proper. The point is that Vedic culture is based on respect.
Mm.
It's based on respect. You have to learn how to respect, as a man, as a male, you have to learn how to respect women. And what does Chinakya say? Prabhupada would often quote, right? You see them as
mother.
Right. That's respect. You see them as mother. Right. So you have to learn to do like that. And the women have to learn to see the men respectfully as well. Therefore, you call them the women Prabhu. Sorry. Therefore you call the men Prabhu. Right? You address them as Prabhus. You don't just say, you know, hey, you know, Uddhava, or hey, Yadu, or hey, you know, like that. Sometimes you hear the mother just say, hey, you know, no, it's not correct. But you address them as Prabhu, and they address you as Mataji. Now, that's correct. And that keeps everything based on respect, right? And then the attitude should be respectful and played out. Not that, yeah, and the women should be given, this is a personal opinion, and it's also the opinion of my Guru Maharaj to some extent, and it's the opinion of, in this time people have different opinions, that's okay. This is coming, this is not like an absolute statement, but this is my understanding and so forth. The women should be given, in the Western world, you know, Western women, they should be given positions of responsibility and so forth, and it can be the same as men. Even Prabhupada said that women can be temple presidents. Prabhupada said that. So it's not that, you know, I mean, maybe in India it may be different. You'll see the men are generally in those positions and the women not, because that's like coming from an ancient traditional culture. But in the Western world, then women should be given respect. They should be given responsibility and offered respect. But the point is, regardless of what the position the women holds or the position the man holds, there should be respectful dealings between the two. That's the point. That's when everything works. It's when disrespect comes in, the problems Right. It's not that, oh, the woman's the temple president, that's why the temple's in trouble. No. It's because they're not relating properly.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. Does that help too?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not even a male and female thing, it's just a respect for anyone. Like, it's just something you wouldn't do to a male or a female, whether it's trying to exert their authority or outdo them or stand in front of them or cut in front of them to offer flowers first. If you wouldn't do that to anyone, like, we should do it to anyone, not male, not female. You should be aware of the man behind it too. Sometimes I see the men will stand right in front of, and it's not just the women behind them, it's the men also behind them. So we just need to be respectful of everyone, not just the men and women.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's just like sometimes the men will offer flowers to Prabhupada, and then the Mudders will take the party and they'll come to offer flowers to Prabhupada, and then a man will walk in late, he's coming after the men, the women are offering, you know, just walk past all the women and grab the flowers and just go off and offer to Prabhupada. Right, that's not proper. Right? You should join the queue. Yeah, wait for the managers and things. Just go on the other side of the temple room, join the kirtan. You don't have to offer Prabhupada flowers right there. Prabhupada can be offered flowers all day. Like that. But the point is, we should be mindful and respectful of others. That's all.
Yeah, with Mangalani standing behind the poles, is it okay if we dance for Radha Balaban at some stage in the Mangalani and move out from the poles? Okay, great.
It's okay. Any other points?
Isn't coal part the main reason why we keep that there so conservative?
Yeah, well, obviously in between coal part and Radha Balaban.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, and I find my back gets forgotten a lot. Like, come in and stand, come here.
Yeah, when I joined, no one would do that. Like that, but like a lot of things, I've noticed in ISKCON, even in the last 20 years, I haven't been in ISKCON very long, but I've noticed in the last 20 years a lot of things of, like when I joined 20 years ago, there were standards which are not being taught and followed so much now, as they were previously. Like when I joined, like no one would stand in between Prabhupada and Radha Balaban and Mangalati or anything like that. Now it's like, and greeting the deities was like, you know, everyone was there and everything was like lines, and now it's like people wandering all over the place and doing all this kind of stuff.
Should we compromise or actually try and maintain that standard?
Well, if they're standing for Prabhupada himself introduced, then that should be maintained.
Okay. And sometimes, like when we do, it's called you're fanatical or heavy, or
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's not being fanatical or heavy. It's just a matter of following Prabhupada.
Yeah.
You know, Prabhupada said do it, then we do it. Just like you'll see, there's a lecture. Prabhupada sitting there. I think it's 1974. That can't be, because temple opened in 75. So I think it's 1975, and Prabhupada's sitting there, and all the devotees are sitting like this. Prabhupada's sitting there giving the lecture, and all the devotees are sitting like this, kind of side on, like looking at Prabhupada like that. Because Prabhupada said in the beginning of the lecture, everyone sat down, they're facing Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, you cannot have your back to Guru or to Krishna. Right? That's why we always pay our obeisances side on like that. So all the devotees are sitting in class like side on. Like, you don't have your back to the spiritual master, you don't have your back to the deities. It's upper right.
That's why you see the very same devotees, like those former Kamsal Rasnam being who was at that time, they stand to the side. You see Rasnam being stand to the side because that's how she was trained.
So the point is, we should be conscientious like that. And Prabhupada established things, we should maintain whatever Prabhupada established. Any other points?
Sometimes I wonder whether Manaji is quite often called each other Prabhu. Seems to me that the phrase Manaji, you know, because everybody should respect their mother, also the mother is considered to be, Prabhupada often says that the love of the spiritual world is most represented by the mother. So as far as Vaishnava qualities, the mother has probably more Vaishnava qualities than to call ourselves Prabhu. Because Prabhu, we cannot be Prabhu really. It's just false praise. We say Prabhu so that we feel we have a servant, and yet we also feel a servant of the mother. So to what degree is that just a fabrication and is eroded? Because it seems sometimes to me that is because now Western society, the position of the mother is not respected. And the qualities of a woman, the natural qualities of a woman caring, it's also not respected.
Mm.
And therefore, because of that, some people want to call each other Prabhu rather than Majesty. Mm. So, if you like to call.
What did Prabhupada say? You know, any reference? I never called.
Different references.
Did Prabhupada say both?
Yeah.
Did he call the women Prabhu?
Yeah.
He did? Prabhupada did. Okay, so that's fine. And Prabhupada did it. I never call women Prabhu. I always call them Maniji. I never call them Prabhu. It's just, I've never, when I joined, I never heard men calling women Prabhu. I never heard that. I always heard them calling Maniji, so I've always done that. And then, you know, since then I've heard people saying Prabhu. But a Prabhupada, I think he used to say Jamuna Prabhu. So Prabhupada did it. You can go either way. You'd have to have a look at it closely and see what he said, but the other says that Prabhupada did both, so.
It is also, I was listening to a lecture from Radha from Ashwin, but just talking about everybody who is Prabhu.
Russell, get back to the Prabhupada. Get to that.
But you were just saying how everybody is Prabhu, so it sounds like, should be right.
Okay.
Like Radha Maharaj, she was giving a talk, and he was just talking about how everybody is Prabhu, even if he's talking.
No, I wasn't listening, I was distracted.
I was listening to a lecture from Radhanath Maharaj, and he was talking about Vaishnava etiquette. He was just saying how everybody is he didn't particularly mention that we should call from each other, but he was just saying that everybody is Prabhu should be treated with death.
Prabhupada said that we should call each other Prabhu. Prabhupada said that.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you are all the Prabhus, and I am the Prabhupada. Which means all the Prabhus sit at the feet of Prabhupada. Like that. So he said, you should call everyone Prabhu. Like that. Prabhupada said that.
The point there is that we see ourselves as a servant of the Vaishnavas. That's not going to really cause the Prabhu to become the master. That's illusion.
And you see the effect, like if someone says something like that, you'll see it. Like during the day, if you're around the temple during the day, if a devotee comes up to you and they say Prabhu, automatically you become like very, psychologically you become very favourably inclined to what they're about to say. Whereas someone just comes up and says, hey Kesh, or just, you know, hey Yadu, or something like that, you'll notice like your mind will be different. But if someone comes and says Prabhu from the very beginning, you'll notice that your mind, like I notice in my own mind, psychologically like you change in the way that you hear them from the first instant. So that's why Prabhupada said we should call each other Prabhu. Because then it shows that we're respecting each other, and if we're respecting each other, then there'll be harmony. That's the psychology behind it.
What about the thing with osmosis devotees that I'm getting to, whether it's DJ or AKG, or whatever, you know, everyone's like, they're not just short enough to like H, but now you're K, and I'm BC.
Prabhupada did it. He had Mr. B.G. there. Prabhupada did that for
him.
What was that for? He called Mr. D.D.D. Maybe just a few years.
Yeah, but he probably didn't do it every time. Probably didn't.
It seems we're now like, what are we doing? Like, K.D.A. Dust. Or B.G.
Yeah, you know, the point that why we're given spiritual names at the time of initiation, the reason we're given spiritual names is because when we chant or when others chant those names, they get purified. Just like someone says Keshava, right? They're purified. Like, you know, I ring my uncle on the phone, yeah, my uncle says, oh, Keshava. Right? So he gets purified. That's why we get a spiritual name. Right? So, you know, you start saying Kesh, or you start saying K. But, you don't get the same benefit. Like that, so that's why we use the spirit, that's why we should say devotee spiritual names, because we get purified by saying that. It's like saying Krishna. You know, like one of Krishna's names is Keshava. Now, so we don't do kirtan and just go, you know, Kesh, Ma, you know, Jan, go. You know, You say Keshava, Madhava, Yadava, Hari. Yeah, you say his names properly, because by chanting the names we purified, so that's why we.
Prabhupada
was saying,
when we die, at least we can remember our own
names. Yeah, if you're always thinking about yourself, that's the way to purify. Yeah, you have an attachment to thinking about yourself all the time. This is the approach to Krishna consciousness. Any other question? Okay. Shula Prabhupada.